This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety. Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 57. Welcome back to the Gunblog Variety Cast. I'm your host, Sean from NC Gunblog, and with me today is Adam from Guns, Cars, Tech Blog. How are you doing, Adam?
I have been sick since the day after we recorded the last podcast. I only went to work 2 days this week, and that's only because I had a training.
Oh, man.
That's why my voice is like 2 octaves lower than it normally is.
Well, and joining us today, actually in the luxurious URS studios.
Sean, this is your office.
Is Weird. How are you, Weird?
I'm doing good, Sean. I flew down on the Gunblog Variety Cast private plane.
So what was written on the side of the Gunblog Variety Cast plane? I'm just kind of wondering about that.
I mean, it said Gunblog Variety Cast on the side of it, but somebody sprayed over it and wrote JetBlue.
Ah, okay. So let's start with our tactical dog and fitness report. 26.8 dog walking miles, and the cooler weather around here means more time to play frisbee and ball at the dog park.
Yeah, it was pretty cool here too, except that I had a fever and a cough that sounds like I came from a zombie movie.
And you don't have a dog, do you, Weird?
No, I'm allergic to him.
Yet you're sitting next to mine.
I got the shots.
Okay, cool. Well, now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the Gun Blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. Thursday marks the 500th post of the Blue Collar Prepping blog, and today she's going to talk about some of the resources to be found there.
Come on, every pony! It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Aaron Paulette!
Hey, Aaron, I was just looking at your prepping blog, bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com, and I noticed that you've hit 500 posts. That's pretty impressive, Aaron.
Well, thank you, Sean. I couldn't have done it without my merry band of cohorts, Chaplain Tim, Evelyn Hively, Loki Dude, David Blackard, and Oki Rio.
So, 500 posts. That must have taken you a long time.
Well, no, not really. It only took about 20 months. I'm actually surprised at how quickly everything came together. In late January of last year, I mentioned that I was interested in starting a weekly prepping article series called Shit Hits the Friday for use on my personal interest blog, Lurking Rhythmically, but I needed ideas and possibly some guest writers. And from there, it rapidly snowballed as I found many folks were disgusted with the traditional wisdom of, to be prepared, you have to be willing to invest tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars into preps. And that there was considerable interest in a blog about preparedness for the working poor. So all told, it took about a week for me to line up writers, get a blog set up, and have our first article written. And since then, my co-authors and I have written 5 articles a week for nearly 2 years, with the occasional Saturday post to help round things out. And while we're mainly read by other Americans, we are strangely popular in both France and the Ukraine, who are tied for our number 2 spot. Chaplain Tim has a more in-depth analysis of our readership and other crunchy bits over at our blog. And of course, I have to give a shout-out to both the Gunblog Blacklist and SurvivalBlogs.org, who are our 2 biggest referrers, bigger even than Facebook, in fact.
Wow. So what kind of things do you do at Blue Collar Prepping Blog? And how is that different from the segments you do here?
For starters, it's a lot easier to do a gear review or teach a skill using text and pictures and videos rather than just listening to my nasal voice in your ears for 5 minutes. We have a wealth of experience among our authors. For example, Chaplain Tim was in water management for 20 years, and so he's my go-to guy when it comes to issues about water purification and filtration. Loki Dude is a professional electrician and avid outdoorsman, so he speaks with authority when it comes to electricity, hunting, fishing, and so forth. I'm actually the least skilled of all my writers when it comes to prepping. I mainly just write well and aren't afraid of public speaking, which is why I'm on this podcast and they aren't. Our topics are wide-ranging. We aren't just the typical grab your bag, go hide in the woods blog. We have folks whose strategy is bugging in and riding out the storm. Some of us are urban. David Blackard lives in a Northern California city. And some of us are rural, like Tim and Loki Dude, and some of us live in the suburbs, like myself. No one strategy is considered superior to others because prepping techniques are like shoes. What fits me may not fit you, so there's definitely something for everyone here. We also run contests in order to attract guest writers because we all have lives and sometimes we aren't able to write a 1,000-word post that week. And we offer some pretty neat prizes for the winners. In fact, last month I issued a skills challenge. Find me something useful to do with all those little Allen wrenches that come with new gun accessories. And that contest lasts through the end of the year and is open to anyone. There's a link to that contest in the show notes. And about once every 2 months, I make a video where I unbox and review something called an Apocabox, which is a lot like a loot crate, except it's filled with camping and survival items instead of toys and t-shirts. As I get more comfortable with recording on YouTube, the frequency of my videos may increase. Finally, in addition to all of that, we also have a Blue Collar Prepping Facebook group. It's a small community, but it's vibrant and growing, and it's a great place to go if you have questions about prepping, or if you want to share ideas without writing an entire blog article about them. I frequently post links to sales or clearances on prepping items, so if you like to shop but you're cheap, like I am, this is a good place to be. So in short, Sean, both our blog and our Facebook group are really good places to go to learn how to prep on the cheap. You get the benefit of the knowledge and experience of some really smart folks, and it costs you nothing.
Sounds like a good deal. Happy 500th post to bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com. And I'll see you next week.
Take care, Sean.
If you'd like to read more from Erin, check out her blog at lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com.
Felon's behaving badly. NC woman fears for her life after threatening ex continues to bond out. Dateline Charlotte, North Carolina. A local mother is fearing for her life because of an ex-boyfriend she says is determined to kill her. Suspect has been arrested multiple times in the past week, once police say for shooting at the woman's house in Hidden Valley. But somehow, suspect keeps getting out of jail.
I can't sleep. I'm losing my mind.
If you want to find the source of this woman's terror, look no further than the bent metal bars on the front of her house.
You bent that bar with the cinder block right there.
And the window glass shattered by bullets.
Shot 3 gunshots in the back window, and my kids was in the bed.
So what sort of person is doing this?
Charlotte Mecklenburg police arrested not long after, they say, he shot into this woman's house multiple times last Thursday.
He's a known gang member, drug dealer. The police know this.
But just 3 days later, he bonded out. Police say coming back to the house where this woman says he pointed a gun at her 12-year-old son.
They can't even come outside and play in their yards without being targeted.
So we've got a guy who's terrorizing his ex-girlfriend. The cops are powerless to stop him. And the gun grabbers are telling women, don't get a gun. He'll just take it away from you and use it against you.
Yeah, but he's already got one, so
probably got lots of them.
Yeah, let's take a look at his record. Assault with a deadly weapon inflicting serious injury, 1-18-91, felon class H. Possess schedule 2, 4-12-94, felon class I. Resist officer, 4-12-1994, misdemeanor. Drug paraphernalia, use possess, 4-20-94, misdemeanor. Possess with intent to sell, schedule 2, 4-11-95, felon class H. Possess schedule 2 attempted. 10-4-2005, felon class I. Extortion, 12-23-2005, felon class F. Possession of a firearm by a felon, 12-23-2005, felon class G. Possess schedule 2, 11-11-2010, felon class I. Assault, threat against government, 3-16-2014, misdemeanor class A1. I looked at this guy's arrest record, and it would take us for the rest of the podcast for me to read it. This guy's been arrested on so many charges that I just lost count. I'm not even going to try.
Awesome.
But all those laws that prevent felons from having guns, they're going to make sure that he doesn't get one as soon as he bonds out again.
Right. They would totally work, right?
It's also not, it's like it's keeping him off the street either.
Yep. Here in North Carolina, unless you're up on a capital charge, like they are going to give you the death penalty if they convict you, they have to give you bond, and that bond has to be at a level that you can pay for it, unless they're determined that you are a flight risk. Because bond is not a punishment to keep you in jail. Bond is surety to make sure that you will show up in court.
As much as that makes me uncomfortable, I can totally see the point.
So can I. With Russia getting involved in the war in Syria, is this turning into a proxy war between the U.S. and Russia? Nikki tells us what she thinks in Foreign Policy for Grownups. Nikki, some people are saying that Russia's support of Syria's Bashar al-Assad is clear evidence of Russia's Cold War mentality, and that Syria threatens to become a proxy war between Russia and the United States. Any truth to that?
All right, so I think before we get into any kind of Cold War mentality on the part of Russia, we need to first explore the concept of a proxy war. Before we label Russia's actions in Syria as part of one, let's talk about what it is. A proxy war is a conflict between two nations without actual direct engagement. So the concept became popular during the Cold War because the common view was that if the USSR and the United States directly engaged one another in a military conflict, the result would be a nuclear war, and no one wanted that. So instead, we fought a bunch of smaller conflicts by either fighting one another's allies or directly assisting our own allies in a military engagement against the Soviet Union's. Remember us arming the Mujahideen in Afghanistan during the Soviet-Afghan war?
No, yeah, sure.
Well, proxy war.
So this current conflict, is it a proxy war or not?
Well, some claim that Russia's support to Syria's Assad, including the recent shipment of what the United States refers to as offensive weapons to Syria, is a clear sign that Russia is gearing up for a proxy war. I'm not going to answer your question directly, Sean. Rather, I am simply going to present both sides of the issue and then let the listeners decide.
Oh, yeah. You report. We decide.
Okay, I lie. I will tell you what I think at the end of the segment. But do remember that I do have my own biases against Russia, given my background as an immigrant from the Soviet Union. I try not to project any of these biases in my analysis, but I am very keenly aware that I have them. On the other hand, you can be sure that I'm not going to bias my analysis in favor of Russia, but it's something to keep in mind. So Russia claims its support for Assad is part of its efforts to fight terrorism. There's no doubt ISIL is a band of bloodthirsty terrorists, so the argument definitely holds water. Putin says Russia is supporting the government of Syria in the fight against terrorist aggression, and is offering and will continue to offer necessary military technical assistance. Islamic terrorism is a real concern for Russia, given its proximity to places such as Afghanistan and its historic relationship with Syria and support for the Arab Spring. Russia also has a naval base at Tartus, which is its only Mediterranean naval base, and defending it is probably fairly high on its list of priorities. Now, Russia says the port is not at all important. A well-connected Russian think tank, which quite frankly makes me suspicious of its claims on their face, says it's little more than a symbol, a point on the map to replenish food and water and carry out some occasional repairs. That there's a maximum of about 50 Russian sailors and specialist technicians there. That it's strategically insignificant. That's it. I would submit that its alleged insignificance is questionable, given that Tartus is an easily accessible logistical staging area. As a matter of fact, two Russian ships recently arrived at Tartus. They offloaded additional troops and armor, and for the first time, a half a dozen third-generation T-90 main battle tanks. This certainly looks like Russia is preparing for war. CNN reports that Russian intentions in Syria are murky. I can see that. It admits the reason for the buildup could be as simple as fighting the Islamic State, but they quote unidentified Pentagon officials who say the more likely scenario is that Russia is helping its buddy Assad attack moderate rebel forces who are fighting his military with America's support. Another possibility is that Putin is hedging his bets should the Assad regime fail, and the military buildup, such that it is part of advance efforts to help Russia influence events inside Syria in the event of said regime failure. The Russians basically just say that they're there to teach Syrians how to use Russian military systems supplied by Russia per existing bilateral contracts. So as you can see, there are definitely reasons for Russia to be out there building up its military assets.
Yeah. But is it a proxy war?
Okay, I would say so far it is not. Sure, we know Assad is a bastard. Sure, we support the militants fighting him. And we know that some of those weapons we send over will and have made their way over into ISIL's hands. But I would say our primary purpose is not Russia. It's not fighting Russian interests in the area. I think this administration is actually ridiculously naive. And we're making some of the same mistakes we made in Iraq by attempting to create what amounts to a leadership vacuum, which, as you know, nature abhors. So that said, as much as the Russian claims of fighting ISIL, training Syrian troops, and protecting their historical interest in Syria makes sense, I think we would be naive, if not outright stupid, to think that Russia isn't preparing for military action that may not be against ISIL. Russia has for years, even since the end of the Cold War, considered NATO and really the United States as the biggest threat to its national security. Hell, the Russians have a downright victim complex about their perception that everyone's out to get them because they want Russia's natural resources and just plain old Cold War views. Frankly, it's Russia that hasn't gotten over the Cold War, and with hardline nationalists such as Putin in power, it's not likely that they will anytime soon. Sure, they view Islamic terrorism as a threat. Sure, they have a long-standing relationship with Assad in Syria. And yes, I do think they have a naval facility that they would like to protect there. But at the same time, given that Russia continues to consider the US and NATO its biggest national security threat, it would be dumb to assume that they wouldn't use the assets they have there to wage a proxy war should the stinky stuff really hit the oscillating blades.
All right, Nikki. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Nikki blogs at thelibertyzone.com.
Plug of the week. The Hyperflight Jaws disc for dogs. Look, there are a lot of crappy Frisbees out there that are allegedly marketed at dogs. They suck. They all suck. Every single other flying disc sucks.
But Sean, they cost $16 to $20 each. That's insane.
So Adam, Tactical Dog is a Malinois, right?
Yes.
Would you say that a Maligator has a soft bite, a medium bite, or a very, very, very strong bite?
Since if she ever breaks a tooth, I have to replace it with one made out of titanium, I'm going to say strong.
Okay, now Dysis is a Dutch Shepherd, which is basically just a Malinois painted black.
Right.
I have three of these discs. I bought a purple Hyperflex, which is a bit softer, and then I bought a blue Jaws disc, and then Grams bought Dysis a pup-sized purple Hyperflex for Christmas. The newest disc of the three is the one that Grams bought for Christmas. Every single one of them is still flying. Dysis snatches these things out of the air, and she is not particularly gentle about it. So would you consider a year's worth of use on a flying disc for a dog like Dysis to be durable enough?
Yes, I think so.
So, you can go out and get a handful of those god-awful PetSmart flying discs for $1 apiece, and they don't fly straight, they don't fly far, and they don't last but one visit to the dog park, or you can shell out the money and get something that doesn't suck. I mean, assuming that your dog likes to fetch.
Yeah, mine likes sticks, and that's about it. Doesn't bring them back to me.
Some warnings. Don't get the Hyperflex, the X-Comp, and definitely don't get the Competition Standard. Get the regular, straight-up Jaws disc. The Hyperflex is a bit softer and wears out sooner. Mine's over a year old and still flies, but it's noticeably more worn than the Jaws disc that's only a few weeks newer. The X-Comp is a harder disc, and it's intended for super long throws. And the Competition Standard is a one-shot, cheap disc just used for competitions. You're not going to be able to use it twice. The dog will chew it right up. Be careful to get the full-size disc. They come in 8¾ full-size and a 7-inch pup. Somehow, Dysis snuck a pup-size disc on my Amazon wishlist, and Grams bought it for her for Christmas. But she's tough, though. She'll catch that one, too. The Jaws disc from Hyperflight come with the Dysis seal of approval. If you play Frisbee with your dog, then get a Jaws disc from Hyperflight. Everything else sucks. There's links for all of these in the show notes. There's 4 different colors, including one that glows in the dark. That's the way to go. If you're going to play disc with your dog, spend the money and have one that lasts you a good long time. Our special guests this week are Tammy and Jenna from the brand new podcast, Women Carry. If you're a woman, or if you have a woman in your life, you're going to want to listen to this one. Tammy and Jenna are the hosts of a new podcast, Women Carry. Both are firearms instructors, Tammy in Alaska and Jenna in Colorado. Both have extensive firearms training experience, teaching both men and women. Welcome to the show, Tammy and Jenna.
Thanks, Sean. Great to be here.
Nice to be here. We're so excited, Sean.
Looking over your training resume and hearing what Gail Pepin has to say about the two of you, we can skip right over the, are you qualified to have an opinion, because clearly you are. But why did you start a website and a podcast, Women Carry?
Well, I'll handle that one. This is Tammy. I started thinking about this last fall and trying to figure out what I could do to help the women that we were seeing come through our classes to go from learning how to handle the gun to actually carrying the gun, because they bought the gun because they wanted to be able to defend themselves. But the best way to be able to do that is to actually have it with them. So as we looked around and we're trying to figure out, we talked about a lot of different things, and there's so much noise in the firearms industry and in the blogging industry that I was trying to figure out how to make a difference, right? And not just be more noise. I had a conversation with Gail Pepin up here. We were hosting Mag 40. Told her a little bit about what I was thinking, and she said, oh, you have to do a podcast. And I said, well, I'm not sure about a podcast. And she goes, absolutely, you need to do a podcast. So that's how the podcast part came about. Was Gail was a little pushy and said, you really need this. We don't have this in the industry. And as I looked around, she was right. We didn't have it. And as I talked with Jenna, I said, would you be interested in doing this with me? And that has morphed. And now we've added a community, because the biggest piece for women is that we're social, and we want to have other people's opinions, and we want to hear what other people are doing, and to bounce ideas back and forth to each other so that we don't feel alone. So I felt like by having the podcast and having the community that we have more of a conversation.
So I'm thinking about buying a gun for my wife. What gun should I buy her?
Oh gosh, I'll take that one. Please, please, please let her pick it out. I can't tell you how many times women come to class with the best gun on the planet. Oh, really? Who told you that? My husband, or my boyfriend, or my son, or my friend who's spec ops. And we take them out to the range. They put 5 rounds in it. They end up bleeding from trying to rack the slide on the teeny little 380 that has a super tight spring. And they're in tears. And they're like, this is the worst gun ever for me. I can't do this gun. And so you give them a Glock or Smith & Wesson M&P, and you kind of get them through the class. And then you say, okay, when would you like to go gun shopping? It happened to us on Sunday.
And the other side of that is that you can't convince them that the problem is the gun, because their Correct. Husband bought it for them, or their friend that's a cop told them this was the one they needed. And trying to actually convince them to try something different sometimes becomes a problem. So you either have they hate you, or I can't solve the problem because you bought them a crappy gun and they love you too much to say it's a problem.
Well, there's another side to that too, which is, if they think, because so-and-so told me this is the perfect gun, if they think this is what shooting the perfect gun is really like, maybe they give it up altogether. Because
right.
It can't ever get better than this. This gun's perfect for me.
Right.
I mean, how different can women be? Why can't women just strap a Glock 19 to the 1¾-inch leather belt and a Kydex outside the waistband holster and just rock on?
Well, first of all, our belts aren't 1¾-inch. And that can actually be a problem, because I have a number of holsters that I've purchased that rattle around on my belt because the clip for it is too big. It doesn't fit my belt. So that brings us into a number of challenges. And one of them is strapping the holster to our belt, that if we
Wait,
don't have the right
belt?
Kind of belt, right? So if we even have a belt, it's often not the right kind of belt. So then it doesn't hold the holster securely. And if it doesn't hold the holster securely, then it's hanging out off of our hips. And hello, are you married? Your wife doesn't want bigger hips than she already has. So putting a gun to our hips just accentuates things that we usually don't want any more of, or it makes us look lopsided. So any of that is a no-no with women. So first off, right there, you've got a big problem. You can't put it on the hip, and we usually don't have the right belt, even if we wanted to. So that's the biggest difference, is that we're just shaped different. When you put a gun on a lady's hip, because it's round, it doesn't just lay flat. It pokes out. It's either going to poke out the bottom or it's going to poke out the top. And if we've got a bad belt, it's going to do either or back and forth. It's just a total mess. So that's the biggest challenge, is that we can't carry like men. We need different kinds of holsters and different kinds of belts. I'm currently in the market for a tapered belt because I have this belt that I was telling my husband, every single time I wear this, my hips hurt. It digs into my hips. And he goes, yeah, that's why Kathy Jackson keeps telling you to get a tapered belt. And I'm like, okay, got it.
Oh, I hate it when that happens.
Right?
What, when Kathy Jackson is right or when you have the wrong belt?
A little of both.
No. We're trying to figure it out. And even as we've been in this industry for years, it's still a challenge. As we change shape, women change shape over time. We don't have one gun and one holster rocks at all. It's the biggest lie in the industry. This is one of the things that we're talking about on Women Carry, is we're doing reviews. We're telling you how it worked for me, Tammy, and how it worked for Jenna, because we have different body shapes. We're different sizes. So when we talk about the holsters and we talk about the guns, you're going to hear how it worked for me and why, and what didn't work for me and why, and the same with Jenna. And you're going to be able to talk on the community and get some different input from different people, because there is no one size fits all. This is very personal.
And we're not going to sugarcoat anything. If we love it, we'll tell you. If we hate it, we'll tell you why. I'm sure we're going to be really popular with the holster manufacturers, but
I don't expect to be getting anything for free, because we don't make any promises at all.
We have drawers full of holsters that don't work.
Right. And it's too expensive to do that.
And that's one of the biggest things that I'm hearing from women, is I want to get it right. I want to have two or three go-to holsters that I know are going to work for me, because it's expensive and I don't want drawers full of holsters.
Well, since the men have that, I'm not certain how the women are going to avoid it. So,
well, because we have community and we talk to each other and we actually listen, which men don't listen. So the reality is, because we have that community, we can help each other out. And one of the first things that we did was create a top 5 holster list. And that's available on our website for anybody that wants to run over and grab that. That's the top 5 holsters that work for both Jenna and I. And we have completely different bodies. And we talk about where you can find those and why they work and what we love about them.
I've often told people that there's two parts to guns. First, there's the mechanical operation. How do you work it? The second is the mental and emotional aspect of the use of deadly force in self-defense. I dealt with the mental emotional aspects back when I was a teen, you know, like most boys do. How's that different for women, and what do you see in class?
A lot of times, the decision to have a self-defense deadly force tool on your person is a very challenging for women, because we're taught to be prim and proper. And there's always, oh, the man will take care of you, that type of thing. So it's never really been overall the woman's job to kind of step up and take responsibility for herself. Until recently, I've seen a big push that women are starting to, you know, want to take care of themselves and their families. And that's awesome. And that's exactly why I started doing this and teaching. One thing I've noticed about women is that I think it takes longer for them to make that decision that deadly force is okay. But once they've made that decision,
watch out.
Yeah, I know. Getting to violence, I think, is a lot quicker for women than it is for men. I think women are more like, whatever it takes, no, not me, not today. Back up, jerk. I'm not your victim type of thing. And I think women can flip that switch faster than men can flip that switch and make that decision when it's time to go.
Men, basically every man has been indestructible at some point in his life. How many women have gone through a phase where they believe themselves to be indestructible?
That doesn't happen.
I think that's the issue.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. And so we're concerned about getting pushed into that corner. We don't want to get pushed into that corner. That's something we have to worry about every single time we walk out of our house, protecting ourselves. That's a concern that men don't have. When I talk to men about why I carry every single day, and I'm talking to this guy that's, you know, 6'4" and 250 pounds, and he says, oh, I don't carry every day, I'm not worried about it, because he's so big. It never even occurs to him that he could be vulnerable.
Right.
Whereas most women feel that vulnerability. They're just not sure what the solution is.
I stand 5 feet tall, so I need something to level the playing field.
Yeah, it only really became an issue for me after I got married, because I could always outrun pretty much any threat that came my way. But the problem is I can also outrun my wife.
Right. Well, and the other part of what Jenna was saying is, so as women, because we know we can't outrun them, if you push us to the point where we decide we're going to fight, look out. because we don't have the same scripts that men have. We didn't grow up fighting and knowing what the rules are. And I think that's one of the things, as I've done some close combat stuff, that the guys in that class were a little frustrated with me. The instructor just laughed his head off because he's like, that's why I want you in this class. Because these martial arts guys think everybody plays by the rules. And the reality is, ladies don't know what the rules are. So you better watch out if you make us fight.
It's on.
Yep. Game on.
Obviously, our listeners can't go to Colorado or Alaska to take classes from you two personally. But if our women listeners would like to get the kind of training you're doing, where can they go?
There are so many fantastic trainers. The people that Jenna and I have trained with. Jenna and I have traveled to get our training. We've traveled and taken a lot of classes up at FAS, which is Firearms Academy of Seattle, with Marty Hayes. He has a fantastic range up there. He brings people in regularly. So we've done classes up there, but they weren't his classes. They were the guest instructors that they're bringing into that range. So one of the things that we're doing is putting vetted trainers on our website. So we have a series of advisors that are helping us pick who these people are, because obviously Jenna and I also have not traveled the country far and wide. And so we've got a number of people that are respected in the industry that are helping us decide who belongs on this list. Nobody can pay us and get on this list. Nobody can just call us and beg us and get on this list. They have to have had experience with one of us or one of the people who are our advisors, because it's important to us that we know that, one, they know what they're doing. They're doing good training. But two, that they're good with women. There's some trainers out there that know what they're doing, but their attitude and the way they work with women leaves us out in the porta potties crying. And that's not appropriate. What we ask our advisors is, who would you send your wife, your daughter, your girlfriend to get training from? And those are the people that get on our list.
Well, all right, Tammy and Jenna, it was good to talk with you. See you again soon.
Thanks for having us, Sean. We'll see you soon.
Yep, come visit us on Women Carry, everybody.
You can hear more from Jenna and Tammy at womencarry.com. Make sure to listen to their first episode for the hilarious discussion of using a toilet while armed. You can find Women Carry on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Fun with headlines.
Nashville man charged with firing gun near five-year-old in Oak Ridge.
Oh, man.
So, what do you think, Weird? What does that say to you?
Oh, man, he's, like, shooting at kids and stuff. He's being bad.
A Nashville man, now, that's about 150 miles between Nashville and Oak Ridge. A Nashville man was arrested for reportedly shooting a weapon near a child Sunday in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Oak Ridge police said suspect fired a round from a gun at a vehicle on Rocky Top Market that afternoon. Three adults and a five-year-old were inside the vehicle at the time of the shooting. The suspect's car was later found parked at a home at Latimer Road. Suspect was taken into custody and charged with four counts of aggravated assault and one count of reckless endangerment. He reportedly surrendered himself to police. So, it's not really that he fired a gun near a five-year-old. It's that he shot at an occupied vehicle that happened to have a five-year-old in it and three other people who he was also charged for assaulting.
Yeah, this was like a gangland hit with some collateral damage.
Or no damage at all, it sounds like.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like anybody was actually hit, but oh my God, he had a gun near a five-year-old.
Well, yeah, you know that when there's little children around, the evil death rays that come off the gun, they're magnified, right?
I know. It happens to me every time I go to daycare, which is twice a day.
Well, this week, Baron had something terrible happen to his debit card. He's going to tell you how he dealt with it in
Tech Tips.
Tech Tips. Tech Tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech Tips with the Baron.
So, Baron, what interesting events have inspired your rant this week?
You know what annoys me more than anything, Sean?
Well, other than gun control?
Well, that's a given.
Other than poor security practices created out of laziness?
Well, I've ranted on that plenty of times too, but no. Today's special little snowflake is your standard identity thief, which in reality is bank fraud.
Oh, someone didn't, did they?
Oh, they most certainly did, and they did it on my debit card too.
No! God, please, no! No! No!
Where and how it was liberated, we're not sure. We don't really use the debit card for anything except at ATMs and on very rare occasions. Instead, we use a credit card and pay off the balance immediately.
So, how bad is it?
Actually, Sean, we did a few things to protect ourselves, and in the process, caught this immediately. Here's what happened. Three transactions were processed, two separate transactions were for $49.99 and another for $39.99. Many people have SMS notifications set up for transactions on their accounts, but most are at least a $50 threshold, so they wouldn't have noticed until after the shopping spree had occurred on the bank and your dime. Well, the wife immediately was notified. She contacted me to make sure I hadn't just purchased something. When I said I hadn't and looked up the names of these particular places, I told her to call in and freeze the card and reverse the charges.
So you cut off their little electronic fraud at the knees, didn't you?
Yep, we froze the account before the first transaction had even fully cleared. Problem for the bank, though, is until the transaction actually clears, they can't refund us the money. Remember, even though it's bank fraud, you can still end up inconvenienced by these little shenanigans. So the simple trick here is to set the limit low, such as about $30. This is a bit annoying because you will see a bit more traffic due to mid-level purchases. However, you're likely to see the test transactions to determine if an account is valid.
Well, that sounds simple.
Yep, and you know what feels great? Knowing that some asshat is going to pay top dollar because it's a verified and active card, yet we killed it before anyone was able to really do anything with it. So much for making an easy buck.
But wait, what about those things they bought with the test transactions?
Aye, there's the rub. You see, they bought services, not goods. So when the transaction is reversed, the company's going to turn those services off.
Boom! Headshot!
That's awesome.
Yep. And remember, kids, watch your account so you too can catch a thief early and ruin his day.
All right, Baron. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org.
Like Baron, I had my debit card stolen once, only my physical debit card was stolen out of my wallet in college.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I found out was I went to go to buy gas, and there's no debit card. So I go home, I'm like, I guess I lost it. Call the bank, and they start reading off all these transactions. I'm like, oh, great. I spent like $900, and I had $150 in my account.
Uh-huh.
And these many years ago, turn of the century-ish, it was much harder to get all the stuff reversed very quickly. It took about 72 hours to get it all reversed. Somebody offered to loan me some money, but they would have had to loan me over the $900 because I was so overdrawn that if I deposited the check, it wouldn't have mattered. So shortly after that, what I did was I actually opened up two separate checking accounts and kept a little bit of money in one and then most of my money in the other so that if that ever happened again, I would still have some money. Now we call that an emergency fund. It's 15 years later and I still like hate that story.
Yeah. I'm curious as to why the transactions went through on a debit card that had no money in the account.
Oh, this was before the Card Act. So today, when you go sign up for a new bank account, they will ask you, hey, do you want to sign up for overdraft protection? Do you? Because they used to just automatically provide that. They will helpfully cover the expenses for you. And of course, charge you a $30 non-sufficient funds fee for every single transaction that they cover for you. So it was actually in the bank's best interest to make those charges go. I paid $47 for a pack of cigarettes one time because of those NSF fees.
Wow.
Yeah.
You must have bought those in New York.
I actually bought them in New Orleans, in the French Quarter, during Mardi Gras. Yeah, that's what happened. Oh, look, I'm out of cigarettes. Well, I'll just go into this convenience store and buy some. $15. Okay.
Addict.
Yeah.
The J Block. Code Blue at CSGV HQ. They are having a collective stroke.
We can only hope.
This comes from our good friend Miguel at gunfreezone.net.
We miss you.
We do. CSGV is just outraged that the National Shooting Sports Foundation got a $2.4 million grant for its Project Child Safe program. Now, Project Child Safe, that's that like free gun lock with every gun.
Right.
That's where they come from.
It's an actual gun safety program.
Yes.
That's also the free gun locks that you get at the police station, right?
I don't know, probably.
Yeah, they hand them out everywhere.
And I've literally had like just stop by to update a permit, put in my my CNR paperwork and all that, and had the cop just like reach behind into a 5-gallon bucket filled with these things and said, here, take 3 or 4 of these. And yeah, no, I've actually used them. Had somebody go, you know what? I've got this gun and I bought a trigger lock for it. A friend of mine had a lever action rifle and she's like, I bought a trigger lock for it. It doesn't work on it. No, they don't. But hey, guess what? I got this cable lock here. Take it. I've got a million of them.
So let's look at CSGV's Facebook page. We were shocked when we learned yesterday that the Obama administration has awarded the Newtown-based National Shooting Sports Foundation a $2.4 million grant for its Project Child Safe program. Since the Sandy Hook massacre in its own community, NSSF has relentlessly lobbied against every single policy that would prevent children from gaining unauthorized access to firearms. Please sign this petition we launched today with our partners at the Newtown Action Alliance and tell the United States Department of Justice that taxpayers should not have to foot the bill for this program, which has been plagued with problems from the start. So they're giving out free gun locks and CSGV is apparently against this.
Yes.
They've lobbied against everything that keeps kids from getting unauthorized access to guns. Except for that thing that keeps kids from getting unauthorized access to guns.
Yeah.
Right.
What's really funny is if you take a look in their comments, they're kind of getting a little pushback from Marie Pantalone.
Project Child Safe is a worthy program. I will not sign as much as I am for better and more effective gun control laws. We should work towards making gun locks mandatory for all guns, not taking funding away from programs that give those gun locks to the public for free.
And from CSGV's response, said program doesn't seem to be very important to the NSSF when the federal government is not footing the bill. We are not saying that gun safety programs are not worthy. We are saying DOJ could have picked a far more reputable partner who is not doing harm in our legislatures. There are many fine police organizations out there that could run such a program, for example.
Are there police organizations that applied for the grant? What organization was denied providing the service? What organization is offering to do the service? Couldn't CSGV do it just as well?
We could do it if we believed distributing gun locks was the best allocation of our time. We do not, given how loose our gun laws currently are, and that is in large part because of the NSSF's lobbying.
Good luck to you, CSGV. I support you, but not on this one.
They're giving away gun locks. $2.4 million worth of gun locks, and CSGV is pooping a Twinkie.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. Grow up.
Yeah, I love the, they don't think that that's a very important program since they're not spending their own money. So let me just tell you how grants work. That's a supplement. They don't pay for staff. The NSSF is actually spending money on that. CSGV, however, is not spending money on actual gun safety.
Because they don't have any money.
Well, there is that.
And they don't have any gun safety either. Their idea of gun safety is to separate people from their guns.
Yes.
And now a word from our sponsor. You know what will happen. If you ever have to defend yourself, you're going to end up in handcuffs. Are you trained to win the fight after the fight? Sure, you can draw, aim, and put two in the ten ring, but have you learned your legal self-defense? Do you know the law? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for your legal self-defense class. Each class is tailored to the laws in your state. Attorney Andrew Branca will teach you the law. Not just what the law says, but what the judge's legal opinions say. What the jury instructions say. Sure, you could risk spending the rest of your life in prison because you followed the advice of some gun store counter jockey. Or you could spend the day with the man who literally wrote the book on the law of self-defense. Carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for a legal self-defense class in your state. And make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to receive 10% off. It's time for another patented weird audio fisk. This time it's Moms Demand Illegal Mayors for Everytown, a wholly owned subsidiary of Michael Bloomberg Inc.'s new video. Whatever it takes. In this week in anti-gun nuttery. Hey, Weird, how's it going this week?
Ah, it's going well, Sean. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
So, Michael Bloomberg decided that his shell group needed to have their own Million Mom March. So he hired his favorite lackeys to show up on September 10th, 2015 in D.C. to parrot his anti-gun views. Note, he didn't actually show his face in D.C. The protest drew a little over 100 people. I watched the event live and it was really boring. But here's Bloomberg's own highlight reel.
I'm not here because I want to be here. I'm here because I have to be here. After my daughter was murdered 2 weeks ago, I said on national television that we have to do whatever it takes to fix this problem.
This is Andy Parker, father of the reporter shot by the progressive nutbag on live TV. If he was just expressing his grief, I'd leave the man alone. God knows he's suffered enough. But since he's decided to attack lawful gun ownership, he's made himself fair game. Here because you have to be here? No, Andy, you came here because you wanted to be here. Also, I want everyone to pay attention. They will talk your ears off about doing whatever it takes, but you will not hear one single concrete plan to actually reduce so-called gun violence. Why? First, because nothing proposed by Bloomberg would have prevented any of these crimes. And second, in the case of many of the survivors who spoke, Bloomberg's proposed laws were already in place.
Keeping the pressure on our lawmakers until they do the right thing. And if they won't, we will find their replacement.
Do the right thing? No. In this case, attacking lawful gun ownership is doing the wrong thing. Let's review the facts, shall we? Gun ownership is way up. All 50 states have concealed carry. All but 6 states are shall issue in practice. 7 states have constitutional carry. And violent crime and murder are down. He doesn't want public safety. We've got public safety. He just wants to ban guns. Also, find replacements for pro-civil rights legislators? That's mighty big talk for a man standing in front of about 100 people. 100 people that Bloomy had to bus in so you could have anybody to talk to at all.
You know, I can tell you that there's no place I'd rather be than in front of all of you here today. Starting tomorrow, I will meet with anyone, any place, any time.
Nowhere you'd rather be, Andy? Of course not. No, you're just loving all the attention. I bet that you're hoping this will jumpstart your failed political career. Aim high. Maybe you could run for U.S. House this time instead of just the Virginia House of Delegates. As for meeting anyone, anywhere, at any time, something tells me you're going to have a lot of free time in your calendar. Sure, the Chuck Schumers and Terry McAuliffes on Capitol Hill will love to have photo ops with you. They're deep blue politicians in deep blue districts. But how many meetings do you think you'll get from politicians who have districts that are actually competitive? Nope, you'll just find yourself talking about gun ban laws with well-known gun banning politicians who will submit gun banning bills that will never see the light of day.
We will do whatever it takes to get our legislators to understand that we're not statistics, we're not numbers, we're human beings dying in the street over senseless gun violence.
So this is the mother of Jordan Davis, the young man who was murdered by the guy who fraudulently claimed self-defense in Florida. The jury saw through the killer's transparent claims and convicted him of second-degree murder. The killer broke the law and will die in prison as a result. No, you're not a statistic. You're an example of how laws work. Laws don't prevent crimes. Laws against murder don't prevent murder any more than laws against rape and robbery prevent rape or robbery. Laws set out those things which you may not do, along with appropriate punishments for breaking those laws. Laws may dissuade some crime, but they don't eliminate it. So what do you propose? You keep saying whatever it takes. Do you know how desperate and scary that sounds? We already know that CSGV endorses swatting lawful gun owners, hoping to see us killed by the responding police. And we saw that Lad Everett didn't even bat an eye when he was called on it by reporters. What the hell is Bloomberg proposing?
We're going to grow the movement in this country to get the gun violence prevention laws and the culture around gun safety that we need in America and we so badly deserve.
Here we have Colin the Alchemist Goddard, who was shot during the Virginia Tech mass murders. Colin's father is the president of a local Million Mon March chapter, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Brady campaign. After he finished up his worthless Bachelor of Arts degree in International Studies, the Alchemist joined the Brady campaign as an assistant director of federal legislation. Colin must have seen that the Brady ship was sinking, so like any other rat, he jumped ship and is now taking Bloomberg's money. They call him Senior Policy Advocate. We see that Colin is a pro in the anti-Second Amendment culture. He doesn't even blink as he mouths the typical anti-gun doublespeak. He starts by referring to Bloomy's anti-gun proposals as gun violence prevention laws, when he knows that none of these proposals will prevent or even lower gun violence. Then he talks about gun safety when he opposes real gun safety training like Eddie Eagle and firearm safety instruction. No. Like all the people there, the Alchemist just wants to ban guns. Aside from a paycheck for the group's leadership, gun bans are all he cares about.
We're not going to give up. We're not going away. This is our life's work. We did not pick this. This picked us.
This is the mother of a 13-year-old girl who was killed by a friend playing with a loaded handgun left in a cupboard above the refrigerator by her father. What actual gun safety is Bloomy advocating to prevent this? None whatsoever. Who is the NRA? The NRA spends millions of dollars every year giving firearms instructions from the very basic on up. The solution to this problem is education and training, not more laws. We have shootings like this with regular frequency here in Massachusetts, and no one can say that gun laws are lax up here in the cradle and the grave of liberty.
We were a family of kayakers and paddlers. Keep the mantra in mind when we confront that big wave at the start of a rapid that's going to try and flip you. Hit it head on and never stop paddling.
Next is Mr. Parker again, continuing the theme. But the advice for his gun-grabbing friends is good advice for us as well. We've seen the first big wave of the rapids. We need to hit it head-on and never stop paddling. Now, for those of you listening to me right now, we can't stop fighting just because Bloomberg has made some headway in the last few years. Don't lose sight of the fact that Bloomy's success has only been due to concentrated efforts in blue states. The much more successful Million Mile March resulted in nothing, politically speaking. It's terrible these people have lost a loved one, but in their grief, they are attacking the wrong people. They're attacking you and me. Bloomy hopes that we will hold our fire on these people because we respect their pain. He's using these people as human shields for his anti-civil rights agenda. As distasteful as it may be, we have to confront them with the truth. Attacking the law-abiding will never stop the criminals. If they really want to prevent violence, they need to focus on the real problems and leave the peaceful gun owners like us alone. We have to keep fighting back because the anti-gun forces are weak and failing. But because they're weak and failing, they're getting desperate. We've seen demands for murder from well-known anti-gun groups. I don't know if Bloomberg would tolerate such boorish behavior, but you never know. What we do know is that this event would have never happened if Michael Bloomberg hadn't paid for it. And this event was a failure. And worse than that, an expensive failure. We need to keep him on his heels and drive him and his hatred to our civil rights into the sea.
All right, Weird. It was good to talk with you. See you again next week.
See you next week, Sean. If you'd like to hear more from me, I'm a regular host on The Squirrel Report, and I blog at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com.
Stuff that grinds my gears. Well, Weird, since you're here, and you're an extra special guest in the luxurious URS studios.
I'm sitting poolside right now, drinking a mojito.
I've got a pool?
Yes.
You do now.
Wait, I've got a mojito? Man, nobody told me.
It's imagery of the mind, Sean.
Oh, that's right. Radio Theater of the Mind. So since you're here, why don't we let you lead us off? What's grinding your gears this week?
Well, so I was on the Squirrel Report, and I was talking about my daughter getting potty training. It's a lot of people have been really nice and helpful in giving me all sorts of wonderful advice that I'm not going to do. So, yeah, guys, thanks a lot for helping, but yeah, I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
Well, I totally heard this like un-potty training thing works. What you do is that you just don't put a diaper on him, and then like you put him on the toilet a lot. And
shut up, Sean. It'll happen on its own. What do you got?
Gun derp.
I think everybody hates that.
Yeah, well, I have some specific gun derp that's just pissing me off. There's these stupid things that people think. They're like received wisdom in the gun community. Like one trainer tells you to do this, and pretty soon everybody's telling you to do this. Like no look reholstering.
That is probably the stupidest thing ever.
You've got to keep your head up. You got to keep your head on a swivel. You got to scan and assess. So if you look at your holster when you put your gun in it, then you won't be scanning and assessing, and you'll lose situational awareness. You know what? If it's not safe for me to look at my holster when I'm putting my gun in it, then what the heck am I putting my gun away for?
Ding.
Another thing that gets me is there's sometimes a little too much emphasis on reholstering. I mean, don't you want to just keep the gun out in case something does happen? And then I heard somebody the other day, someone who I really respect, but they were talking about, well, now you're seeing that law enforcement is suddenly showing up on the scene. Now you can slowly reholster the gun, or you can just throw it on the damn ground. I want this gun as far away from me as possible so that the police can collect it and deal with it and not sweep my body with it and accidentally touch off a round, which they might do if they're futzing around with my holster.
Actually, the guy that taught my concealed handgun permit instructor course, He's the lead firearms instructor for the entire state of North Carolina for police officers. And in his inimitable way, he said, look, you've already pulled the gun out. You've already shot somebody. What if there's two? It's a twofer. You know, you're not going to fill out any more paperwork. If there's somebody else that needs to get shot, you may as well shoot him too. You know, why are you going to put it away? You might miss your opportunity. I was like, well, that's a creepy thing to say.
That's interesting.
And this is from the lead firearms instructor from the police in the entire state of North Carolina.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
The second one that just grinds me is this whole, I got to stick my finger into the chamber after I have cleared the weapon so that I can tactilely, as opposed to tactically, tactilely assess the emptiness of the chamber. Because I guess looking isn't good enough. Oh, what if you're in low light? Well, what the heck are you doing unloading your gun in the dark, you moron? If it's safe enough for you to unload your gun, it's also safe enough for you to reach up, flip the light switch, and turn the light on. If you need to stay in the dark because it's not safe for you to turn on the light and, you know, tell everybody where you are, then why are you unloading? There is absolutely no reason for any non-military person to unload their gun in the dark.
Why would the military be unloading their gun in the dark?
There are circumstances where you might have to clean your weapon in the dark. Some of the extra special forces where they're out, you know, in the middle of nowhere, there's some good reasons that they might do it, but it's probably pretty rare. But there's no reason that I would ever have to do it in the dark. That's just silly. The last one is this whole, you must use the power stroke. Never, never use that slide lock lever to finish your emergency reload, right? You put the magazine in and then you reach up and you slingshot that thing forward. If you push on the slide lock lever, then, oh, you're totally wrong. Because, you know, they give you like two different reasons for this. One is the whole gross motor skills thing versus fine motor skills. And look, gross motor skills, that's walking, right? That's big muscles doing big things. Walking is a gross motor skill.
That's operating limbs.
Yes, exactly.
Fine motor skills is operating those cute little appendages at the end of those limbs.
Right, to use the freaking trigger. That is a fine motor skill. Well, you know what? If you don't have the fine motor skills to operate that slide lock lever, then you don't have the fine motor skills to operate the trigger. So fine motor skills, gross motor skills, shut up.
Also, they keep talking about, like, even though you can't hit that slide lock, you can hit the mag release.
Yeah, that's even smaller. And then you get, well, what if, you know, it only works on certain guns? Well, how many guns do they think I have? I'm only carrying one pistol, you know, and it works the same way today as it does tomorrow. So, I mean, if I train to use it, there's no reason I can't use it. Oh, what am I going to get into like a battlefield pickup situation? Oh, I won't be able to find the slide lock lever on this, you know, I don't know what.
Tokarev.
Yeah, something like that.
Nambu. So,
yeah, I'm going to pick up a Nambu pistol. Do they not have slide locks? I don't know anything about a Nambu pistol.
I don't either, but I know a power stroke would work every time.
Yeah, well, you know what? If I can't find the slide lock lever, or if I'm juicing somebody's gun that I don't know, I can remember how to do the power stroke. So, I mean, it's not like I can't, oh gosh, I've never trained with it. I don't know how to do it. I'm not going to forget it. So, enough with the freaking gun derp. Stop it. So, Adam, what do you got?
So, I actually have the complete opposite.
You like gun derp?
No. I don't have a thing that grinds my gears this week, mostly because I didn't have any human interaction all week except for the last 2 days. So nobody was around to really make me mad. But when I was leaving yesterday, I had to leave early to go to a training. And, you know, I think I've talked before about how it's 17 miles from my house to the interstate on a winding two-lane road. Well, I'm almost to the road out of the neighborhood, and there's a school bus stopped at the end of the road. And as I turn the corner, I just see the last kid get on the bus. And I'm thinking, great, now I'm going to be behind this bus for 17 miles and I'm going to be late to my training. Well, apparently the bus driver saw me like come around the corner, and instead of just like getting ready and going, she actually waited for me to get to the stop sign and then waved for me to go ahead and get in front of her so that I didn't have to be behind her for the next 17 miles. And I was like, this is awesome. This is absolutely great. I got to talk about this on the podcast. That was fantastic. It's like, there are nice people in the world. There are people that understand that them being able to launch from that stop sign 2 seconds earlier so that they can get in front of me doesn't really help them a lot, but it screws me up a lot. Screws me up badly.
Well, You know what I think about buses and school buses and the stupidity around here. You know, they're always very nice. All the bus drivers always wave at you as they're driving by while you're walking the dog in the morning. But I would like to see more of that. More understanding that they're not the only thing on the road. And the fact that they can put people in some very serious financial and legal jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
It's helpful to know that there's at least one bus driver out there who knows that throwing that weight around is just a jerk maneuver.
And, of course, I know that this bus driver is probably going to be the same bus driver for my kids.
That's also helpful to know. I didn't think of that. I don't have any kids.
And I can easily tell that Adam does not live in Massachusetts.
No.
That was the hardest thing moving from Maine to Massachusetts is, yeah, you're not allowed to be nice to people in Massachusetts. It used to be in Maine, you'd drive along, you'd see someone waiting at a stop sign, you know, on an intersection, and you're like, hey, I'm not in a hurry. I'll wave that guy forward. See, Massachusetts, the laws are different. So long as you're stopped near a stop sign, you've stopped at the stop sign. So when you wave that one person through, the 15 people waiting behind them will all go in front of you.
Nice. Nice.
They might have been a quarter of a mile down the road, but they were stopped and there was a stop sign.
Yeah, great. Well, all right. So it didn't grind your gears, and I think we'll let you... How's it go? I'll allow it. Good on you, bus driver. Well, that's our show for the week. Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music, and thank you for listening to the Gun Blog Variety Cast. Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com and hate mail to WizardPC at GunsCarsTech.com. Like and share us on Facebook. And if you receive this podcast through iTunes, make sure to leave us a glowing 5-star review. Show notes can be found at GunBlogVarietyCast.com/episode57. Kinda getting a little pushback from Marie Pantalone.
You want me to read it?
Yeah. Okay. You're the girl.
I forgot. I'm the girl. Project Child Safe is a worthy program, and I will not sign as much as I am for... I wasn't ready for this. Project Child... Don't laugh at me. Don't laugh at me. Don't look at me. Don't look at me. I'm beautiful. I'm pretty. I'm pretty. Project Child Safe is a worthy program, and I will not sign as much as I am for... Oh, man, I don't go much higher than that. Project... If you want to hear more from that weird beard guy, fuck him. If you'd like to hear more from me, I'm a regular host on the Squirrel Report, and I blog at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com.